You're listening to the Options Insider Radio Network. For more quality options programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio Network in your podcast provider of choice. Listeners can also access all of our programming through our mobile app, available in iTunes and on Google Play. Don't forget to follow along with your favorite programs and submit your own questions for the hosts at twitter.com/options. Facebook.com/TheOptionsInsider or via questions@TheOptionsInsider.com.
This is the Option Industry Council's Wide World of Options. Before we start today's show, investors should know that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. OIC makes no recommendation with respect to any financial firm. OIC does not make any warranty as to the accuracy, usefulness, timeliness, or the continued availability or existence of information created or maintained by others. Multiple leg strategies involve multiple commission charges. Opinions and strategies expressed by others are not necessarily those of OIC, nor does OIC endorse, warrant, or guarantee products, services, or information described or offered by such firms. Commissions, fees, margins, interest, and taxes have not been included in any of the examples used in this show. These costs impact the outcome of all stock and options transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential consequences. None of the information presented in this show should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell security or to provide investment advice. Welcome to the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. OIC was created in 1992 to educate investors and their financial advisors about the benefits and risks of exchange-traded equity options. And the Wide World of Options radio show is one of the ways the message is spread. OIC also offers a variety of other resources to those interested in learning more about options, including webinars, podcasts, and live events. For more information, check out optionseducation.org. Now, here's your host, OIC's Director of Individual Investor Education, Joe Burgoyne.
Joining our Profiles and Perspectives segment today is Michael Thompson of Thompson's Investment Guide. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get into, much of what you do, how about if you tell our listeners a little something about yourself?
Sure. I am a full-time author of options and stock market books. I also have started up a website, which you kindly mentioned, which was Thompson's Investment Guide. And I'm going to be doing some education there and running a virtual portfolio. I do a lot of public speaking and online coaching, and just anything having to do with options for the most part, but investing in general as well.
And, the name of our show is OIC's Wide World of Options, and that's part of the reason, we were lucky enough to have you join, because you're one of the option folks out there.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
How did you develop such a keen interest in investing, Mike?
It started in San Francisco. I was an accountant, and a fellow accountant said to me one day, "Hey, you should look at this thing I discovered. You can sell these options and get the money, and then they expire, and you do it again, and you get to keep the money." And I said, "That doesn't sound right. How could that be?" And so I looked into it and went and met with his broker, and we talked a while, and I went to a bookstore and bought all the options books I could find, which this was 1978. There weren't very many books out there. The ones that were out there were awful. They were just impossible to understand. At the time, the options industry was very young, and there was not a lot of knowledge. A lot of strategies we have today were not developed. And by the way, there was no internet, so trading an option was very complicated. So over a period of years in which I learned how to actually trade, I decided to write my own book. And so I approached John Wiley & Sons and offered to write a book, which they said, "Well, you have to prove that you know what you're doing, so send us about 6 months' worth of trade confirmations." In those days, we had paper confirmations because, again, there was no internet. So I took a second mortgage on my house for $15,000, which was a bunch of money in those days. I traded for 6 months, mainly covered calls, and doubled my money. I then gathered up the confirmations, sent them to the editor at Wiley, and they gave me a contract. But they said, don't get your hopes up. We probably won't sell very many copies of this book. It ended up getting called Getting Started in Options. And as of right now, it's in its ninth edition and has sold over 350,000 copies. And it's coming out this year in its 10th edition, being published by DeGruyter, DeGruyter. So I'm pretty happy about that. And, of course, it's led to many other books along the way.
Indeed it has. What a wonderful story. And I think, actually, if memory serves me, your most recent book you published in November of 2017, I think that's Stock Market Math, Essential Formulas for Selecting and Managing Stock and Risk. Is that right?
Yes. And the thing about this book that makes it different than most math books, first of all, I try to keep it very simple because I'm not a mathematician, and I believe most of my readers are not mathematicians either. And so I not only include in this all of the formulas organized by chapter, but I also include the Excel program so that you can just copy that into an Excel spreadsheet, plug in your numbers, and get all the formulas you want for a variety of fundamental, technical, rate of return, internal rate of return, compound interest, all of that. You can get that on an understanding of it in the book, as well as getting the Excel formulas to put into a spreadsheet.
Well, fantastic. I actually love the fact that you include the word risk in your title. So often, you know, investors, you know, they initiate a trade, and oftentimes, especially those without, you know, a disciplined investment approach, they kind of forget about it. And that whole aspect of managing risk is so important.
Yes, and I struggle with this constantly, especially when I do online coaching and participation in webcasts and things like that. Options traders, by and large, don't want to hear about risk or fundamentals. They want to hear about what trade should I make right now and how much money am I going to make on it. And, you know, you end up losing when you don't address the issues of risk and fundamentals. And this is something that has made me consider myself a conservative options trader, which sounds like an oxymoron, but it really isn't. And, you know, what makes me different than most options folks is the majority, I think, focus on the Black-Scholes method, at least the academics do, and they focus on implied volatility. I focus on technical indicators, the underlying, and what is the underlying doing, and is it a fundamentally strong company, and would I be willing to hold a position in that company based on dividends and levels of debt and revenue and earnings. And the whole reason I do that instead of looking at implied volatility is another word for options is derivatives, meaning they're derived from what's going on in the underlying security, the stock usually, or the index or ETF. And so if you understand what's happening with the underlying security, then you can easily identify from the technical indicators the timing of entry and exit of a position. It's a pretty simple formula.
Well, I think you've started to define your investment philosophy for us, and I appreciate that. A couple thoughts come to mind. You mentioned those technical indicators. You want to speak a little bit about maybe some of them so our listeners understand. And then the other part is, you know, why are options so important to your philosophy?
Okay. I'll mention two technical indicators that I like to use in conjunction with each other. These are a very powerful indicator. One is Bollinger Bands, which is an average, a simple average of price, along with two standard deviations above and below. So you get three lines. You get the middle band, the upper band, and lower band. This defines dynamically the resistance and support of the trade. So you can see as those bands move apart, meaning higher volatility, or come closer together, meaning lower volatility, you can time long and short options trades accordingly. The second one, which goes along with this beautifully, is the T-line, which is an 8-day exponential moving average of price. When you put these two together, something very interesting happens. As the price of the underlying begins to move up, you see that the upper band is dynamic resistance, and the T-line becomes dynamic support. So you develop these very reliable channels that you can track. And as you see the price break out of that channel, that's a signal of a reversal. On the way down, you see the T line acting as declining resistance and the lower band of Bollinger declining support. And the same thing, as long as the price remains within that channel, you know that the downtrend will continue. But once price crosses above those levels, you can see that as an early signal of likely reversal. And timing options trade accordingly is going to make that very reliable.
Wonderful detail there. Thank you. Thank you for offering that. One question. I know as as many of us go to our trading platforms, we can find the Bollinger Bands. Are they typically defined at the two standard deviation move, or do you have to actually input that? Okay.
Yes, it is. And I like to use the standard because it's been tried and tested and it seems to be very reliable. Now, if you want an extreme signal about when to make a trade, change that or add into that the three standard deviations. In extreme movements, you see price sometimes move above the three standard deviation on the top or below the three standard deviation on the bottom. That is not going to stay there very long at all. So that's almost 100% confidence that you're going to have a reversal. I say almost because there's no such thing as 100%. But the chances of a price remaining above or below three standard deviations is very, very slim. So that's a good way to play the extremes, to know how long those extremes will last.
Yeah, those three standard deviation moves are just so rare in the marketplace. But again, thanks for that insight. How and why are options so important, Keith?
Yes, that was the second part of your question. Well, I think a lot of people look at options, especially in the past, looked at options as speculative devices, and there's a place for that, and I do some speculating as well as my hedging, but speculation plays a role in the market by giving us good price discovery and a good offset to what we see happening in the market. But I think increasingly what the options industry is doing is beginning to recognize the value of options as risk hedges. And more, I think, among portfolio managers and professional investors, we see that options are playing this role of being able to provide us various kinds of insurance. Of course, the long put is a standard insurance put that we all know about, but there are many other forms of this, including the use of leaps to freeze today's price for future potential purchase or to freeze today's price to eliminate risk when you hold a position in a stock. In other words, there's a lot of various ways that you can hedge positions with options, and there are amazing devices for that.
And, I was blessed to make markets on the floor of the Philadelphia for over 20 years, and it's a heck of a lot of fun at the same time.
Yeah, and that's the oldest exchange in the world, as far as or at least in the U.S., and I would imagine that I've never done anything on the floor other than visit, but I would imagine that that's an exciting thing to do for a while until your blood pressure takes over.
Well, I am well medicated, and especially for those three standard deviation moves, I assure you. But options, they really are, as you say, they're just a phenomenal financial tool that oftentimes get a bad rap. Too
and
complex.
Part of the problem there's a lot of beliefs about options that aren't true.
Agreed. It's so true. So, you've offered a couple real gems for our listeners. Any closing thoughts, Michael?
Well, all I would say is that for anyone out there who is trading options or wants to trade options, please remember that you need to start at the fundamentals of the company and move from there into the technical side and select stocks that are exceptional in terms of dividend yield and debt management and revenue and earnings. And if you do that, you're going to succeed a lot more than you would if you just go right to the options and look for the richest premiums. You know, be conservative about it and you'll do okay.
Well, Michael, actually, one last thing I do want to ask you. I mean, you really are a prolific writer. Have you always had a real love of writing?
I have. And as I mentioned a while ago that I had been an accountant when I discovered options, and I was good at accounting, but I didn't enjoy it. And so I decided after many years of doing that to break out and become an author and write books about the things I really like, which include options, of course, and stock market topics and math, and especially stock market and options math. And that's my real love. And so I would prefer to do that than do accounting. That's what got me into it.
Fantastic. How can listeners find some of your material or reach you if they'd like?
I would love to hear from anybody and everybody. And on my website, I answer all inquiries personally. And that's Thompson Investment Guide. And if you look up that online, you'll find it. The website would be the easiest place to find me. And it's thomsetsguide.com, one word, thomsetsguide.com. I also, all of my books are available on Amazon and any other online bookstore, if anybody's interested in that. I also have links to that on my website. So that's the go-to place to find things.
Well, fantastic, Michael. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thanks for offering your insights and wisdom into the options market today.
Thank
on
you.
Profiles and perspectives.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
It's time to break down the latest option strategies. That means it's time for Strategy Spotlight.
Joining us today for Strategy Spotlight is Stan Freifeld of McMillan Analysis Corp. Stan is, the person at McMillan who started the mentoring program. So, Stan, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
You know, my guess is a number of our listeners are already familiar with you, but for those of our listeners who aren't, how about if you tell us a little bit about yourself and, your involvement in the options industry?
Well, sure. I'll give you the quick version. I started out as an actuary. I was a part owner of a pension consulting business. I sold that and went into floor trading on the American Stock Exchange. That was in 1994, the beginning of 94. I sold the business in 93. And after a while, I became an official of the floor. It's called a white badge floor official. And so I got to see the market making side of it, and then more of the regulations and how the exchange actually is run. I did that. I was on the floor until 9/11. I left on 9/11. I was planning to leave around that time, but not that day. There were seven members of the exchange who unfortunately were killed. I left, and I contacted Larry McMillan, who's a well-known trader and author, educator, and spoke to him about setting up the mentoring program. And he said, sure, why don't we get together for lunch? We did. We've become good friends. We started the mentoring program, and it's been ongoing for a good number of years at this point.
Well, go ahead, Stan.
No, I was going to say, and so what I do now is I trade during the day, and I mentor during the day. So I might have an hour with a student. It's a one-on-one program. So I might have an hour with the student, and then maybe the next hour or 2 hours free, where I'm free to do my trading, and then I'll do more mentoring. And to me, it's the best of both worlds. I love trading. It's the kind of thing I think when people start doing it, you could become addicted to it, because it's such a great way to make money. It's competitive, and there's lots of benefits to trading. And teaching people how to trade, I'm just kind of a natural educator. It's just my personality. I also teach kids for math SATs. I just enjoy doing that, Joe.
Well, it's too bad you don't like numbers, Stan.
Yeah. I like numbers more than words, that's for sure.
Well, thanks to you, the focus of Strategy Spotlight today is going to be gamma scalping. We've really never focused on this particular approach to trading in Strategy Spotlight, so I'm really pretty excited about it. As we get started, for listeners who may not have any idea what the heck gamma scalping is, could you define it for us?
Sure. To understand gamma scalping, you have to know what gamma is. And gamma is one of the option Greeks. And for people who are trading spreads, it's my belief that they have to understand the Greeks. It's kind of like the gauges in a car. You wouldn't drive a car if you didn't have a speedometer or a gas gauge. Well, I believe that you really have to be careful if you're going to trade options without using the Greeks. But anyway, the Greek that we're talking about in particular here is gamma. And the way gamma works is when you have positive gamma in a position, it generates positive deltas as the stock price moves up and negative deltas as the stock price moves down. So with gamma scalping, the plan is to put on a position that starts out delta neutral. That means the total delta of the position is about or close to zero. And then as the stock price moves up, this positive gamma will generate positive deltas, making us long on the way up. And so we want to sell stock to bring us back to delta neutral. So we're selling when the stock moves up. On the other hand, as the stock moves down, this positive gamma will generate negative deltas, making us short. So what do we do to get back to delta neutral? We buy stock. So it's making us buy low. So think about that. We're buying low and we're selling high. You know, it's a trader's dream, so to speak. That's the basic concept.
Okay, gotcha. And, of course, no wonder you love trading so much. You're buying low and selling high. And, of course, you know, that takes me to the question of theta, but I'm not going to go there yet. How do you go about, you know, picking the stock or index that you'd like the gamma scalp? You have an approach for that. Okay, please.
I've come up with a set of criteria, and if you understand how gamma works, or when you understand how gamma works, you'll see that basically you want to start out with a low price stock. And by low, I'm defining that as 25 or less. We want low implied volatility. And again, I'll define that as 25 or less. We want a low IV percentile. And again, 25 or less. And that way I have... Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, low IV percentile, you may have lost some folks on that. Would you please explain it?
Oh, sure. IV percentile represents where the volatility is relative to where it's been. The way we measure it at Macmillan is over the last 600 trading days. So, for example, if I tell you that we have a stock and it's in the 20th percentile, that means... If I say the volatility is in the 20th percentile, that means that 80% of the time, volatility has been higher. So if you were going to place a trade based on volatility, do you think you'd want to say, well, volatility will go down from here or up from here? Well, if 80% of the time volatility has been higher, my best guess is that volatility would probably be going up. And just as another example, if we're in the 90th percentile, that means that volatility has only been higher 10% of the time. So again, if I wanted to place a trade based on volatility, my best guess or best prediction, I hate to call it guesses, right? My best prediction would be that volatility will be going down, decreasing. So that's what volatility percentile means. So I want something in the 25th or less percentile, meaning that 75% or more of the time, volatility has been higher. Okay?
I think so that percentile is quite important. The criteria is you know, so black and white. That's fantastic. Where can investors find this, you know, IV percentile? Do you have a couple spots where they can find it?
I get it from actually software that was written by a former student of mine called the Option Workbench. But I think what would be more available to most of your listeners would be the Thinkorswim platform. Now, their calculation is a little bit different than ours. They look over the last 1 year. We look over the last 600 trading days, which is about 2.5 years.
Okay.
That's the difference.
Well, again, the black and white aspect of laying this out, Stan, is, I think, really, really helpful for our listeners. You've laid out some criteria. How about, the amount of movement before maybe you make, an underlying trade? Do you have max theta per day, delta limits? Talk to me about some of that as it relates to your style.
Yeah. I told you three of the criteria, the low stock price, low IV, and low IV percentile. And those are easy to remember. We just go with the 25-25-25 rule. They're very easy. We want all of those to be less than 25. There's also the issue about, do we want a long-term time frame or a short-term time frame? And long-term seems to work out better. So I typically look at options that are 5 or 6 months to go. And just if you're keeping with the 25 rule, we could say 25 weeks, which is about 175 days. So that also fits in with the 25. We also want sufficient liquidity. Liquidity is very important because we're going to be buying and selling stock, and we don't want there to be too great a spread between the bid and the ask price. In addition, now getting to the theta issue, one of the important metrics is the gamma theta ratio. And we want to get as much gamma as we can for as little theta. In fact, I think of it as we're buying the gamma with theta. So if we could maximize that ratio, it's going to work very well. Because the problem with gamma scalping, or the downside of it, is that every day we're paying a little bit of theta. The value of our position is decreasing just as time goes by. Options decay. And so we want to minimize that as much as we can. And that's one of the reasons why I want to go out to maybe 5 or 6 months, because the longer the time period is, the smaller the theta will be. So it's a good point, and it's very important for gamma scalping to have very little theta.
Can we hone in a little bit more on that gamma theta ratio again? I think it's great advice. What type of ratio are you generally looking for?
Well, the ratio, when you think about it, that ratio is highest when we have low-priced stocks. I mean, that's where my criteria come from. And it could range from, it could be very high from 180. I've seen 200 in that range down to maybe 20 or so. But it's an important metric, and I always compare the gamma-theta ratio with any particular stocks that I'm looking at to determine if it makes sense to do any gamma scalping with it. I ran a scan this morning before talking to you, and I found two potential candidates. There's not that many today because, think about it, volatility is relatively high. So with high volatility, we're going to run afoul of my 25 volatility percent.
But that's also where, the discipline of defining your criteria and then sticking to it, you've got that plan that in the long run is what really, helps the bottom line.
Yeah, you have to have a plan. You have to stick to it. If you loosen up the criteria, it might work in some situations. There'll be other situations where it doesn't work. You're turning it more into a guessing game. We don't want to guess when we're trading options. Trading options is a very serious business. It's a very competitive business. And so we want to have the best tools and best criteria that we could come up with at our advantage.
Amen to that. And it can be a fun business as well. I'm going to go back to the gamma theta one more time, Stan. So
sure.
You run you know, your list of stocks, and you came up with two today. Two questions about how big of a universe do you run when you're analyzing for this gamma theta ratio, how many stocks or indexes? And then the other thing, if we go back a year in a low, you know, volatility environment, how many opportunities would you find then versus, you know, what is now clearly much higher volatility environment?
Yeah, right now it's very difficult to find opportunities. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this, but an important criteria is the volume, and I want at least 5,000 contracts trading per day, an average of about 5,000. So right away that eliminates a lot of the stock universe. I start out scanning about 3,500 stocks, and the 5,000 criteria cuts out a tremendous number of those. I think I was down to about 350 or maybe a little more than 350, and from that, there were only two that met my 25-25-25 criteria. Today. So in the past, though, when volatility was low, I'd run a scan and there might be, on any particular day, there might be 10 or 15 different stocks to choose from where the gamma scalping might work.
Okay, fantastic. And yes, you had mentioned liquidity previously, but you were not specific to that 5,000 contracts a day. So thanks for offering that. Let's see, a couple more questions. How about, you know, when you're gamma trading, do you have a maximum delta that you take on before you initiate a trade to move back closer to a zero delta?
Yeah, that's actually part of the art of gamma scalping. We come up with the number of deltas that we'd need to make an adjustment. And what I usually use is 80% of a one-day standard deviation move. I didn't want to get too technical, but we could calculate a one-day standard deviation by taking the annual historical volatility and dividing it by 16, and then multiplying that by 0.8, and that's the amount of move in the stock price that would generate an adjustment to the deltas, either on the upside or the downside.
That's fantastic, and we may have lost 80% of our listeners, but that's okay, Stan. That's okay for the 20% who got that. That's a beautiful thing. Again, really,
okay.
The detail you're offering, I think, is really, really helpful. How many positions do you gamma trade at once, and how do you go about, you know, deciding how many to do?
Well, gamma scalping is not a trade that you put on today and take off tomorrow. It's typically a longer-term trade. You keep it on as long as it's working or until volatility increases. Because remember, if volatility increases, the value of your base position, the straddle, will increase. And we don't care if we make the money through the actual scalping or if we make it because our straddle has increased tremendously in value because of volatility. That's when I would take the position off. But anyway, it's a relatively long-term type of trade that we're doing every day, but with the same straddle setup. And typically, when I do it, I might have two positions on at the same time that I'm gamma scalping. This is it's a strategy where you're not watching the market all day long. There are ways you could put in orders. I generally put in good till cancel orders, and I try and automate the process as best I can. I'm not saying put it on and go take a vacation. You have to watch your positions, but you could be doing a lot of other trading at the same time that you're gamma scalping. I do two at a time generally, or sometimes just one, depending on what the market conditions are.
And are your positions always option and option, or do you sometimes have the underlying along with an option?
No, I'm, you know, I'm really an options trader. I start out with a straddle for the gamma scalping. I start out with the straddle, and then I'll scalp the gamma as the stock moves up and down, as I described before. Other positions that I might have on, and other types of trading that I do, are also option related positions. I don't start out with the stock portfolio and then put options around the stock portfolio. I start out with an options portfolio or option trades. I'm an options trader. That's what I do. I'm not saying that's right for everyone. I have the experience, and I, you know, I have the ability to do that, having done it for a long time. So,
well, that's you know, really wonderful guidance. As I say, the black and white answers are just fabulous, Stan. Before I ask how our listeners can contact you, any closing thoughts you'd like to offer?
Well, yeah, I'd like to say that as far as gamma scalping is concerned, in the past, it wasn't considered a very viable strategy because buying and selling stock was so expensive. The commissions alone, the bid-ask spreads were wide. But today, commissions have come down so much. You can buy and sell 1,000 shares of stock for a very small commission. I mean, it's going to vary from broker to broker, but you could find you could do that anywhere between $5, maybe $10, something like that, an amount that isn't excessive, where in the past, buying and selling stock cost a lot of money, and so it would eat up a lot of the profits of the gamma scalping. And now with the penny pricing, that actually has helped us as well for gamma scalping. So some of the things that might have hurt option traders in one regard are really helping option traders in another sense. And so I think now it's a viable strategy, a very viable strategy. And also, it's a relatively conservative strategy. Think about this. If we're putting on a straddle at a low volatility, a low IV percentile, well, could volatility still go lower? Could we lose value on the straddle? Yes, we can, but the likelihood is more that that straddle is going to increase in value. So my point is, I think it's a relatively conservative strategy. We might be putting, you know, a significant amount of money into the straddle, but that money is not all at risk.
Great, great comments to leave our listeners with. How can folks get, you know, get a hold of you, Stan, if they wish to?
Well, I'm one of those rare guys. I love talking to option traders all the time. I don't mind calls from public option traders who want to learn more. My direct phone number is 973-362-4558. And alternatively, my email is my first name, Stan, S-T-A-N, at optionstrategist.com. And that's OPTIONSTRATEGIST.com.
Well, Stan, I think our listeners can understand how you started the mentoring program at McMillan, given our last 20-minute conversation. I just can't thank you enough, and thanks so much for joining us today on Strategy Spotlight.
Again, thank you, Joe, for having me. It was a pleasure, and I hope your listeners find this strategy to be useful for their trading. Have a great day.
Thank you, Stan. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Next, let's upgrade your options toolbox with cutting-edge trading platforms, devices, and information. Let's talk about tools, resources, and good reads.
In today's tools, resources, and good reads, we'll start with our own MyPath online options courses. You can find MyPath at optionseducation.org. Take the 20-question assessment, then help yourself to a number of educational modules at the beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels. That's MyPath at optionseducation.org. I'm going to stay with the optionseducation.org site for today's resource two. Go to the Tools and Resources drop-down bar and look for Historic and Implied Volatility. There you'll find 1 year of volatility charts, which can offer very beneficial information when initiating an options position. Actually, there are 19 different superb offerings under Tools and Resources at optionseducation.org. Please check them out. And finally, our good read today is one I've mentioned before. It's Jim Cramer's 2002 book, Confessions of a Street Addict. Having spent 23 years on the floor of the Philadelphia Options Exchange making markets, maybe I'm a bit of an addict too, but this book I just couldn't put down. You know, Wall Street is as much about psychology as it is economics, and this book gets into both in a behind-the-scenes, really fascinating way. That's Jim Cramer's Confessions of a Street Addict. Thanks for listening to today's Tools, Resources, and Goodreads.
Ready for a little nostalgia? It's time to take a look back.
In today's Looking Back, let's do a quick review of the markets since the last presidential election 17 months ago, November 2016. It sure hasn't been a quiet ride. The Dow Jones averages ran up close to 47% from 18,000 to about 26,500 in January of 2018. We're currently correcting some of those wild gains, with the Dow averages pulling back about 10%. The S&P 500 has had a heck of a run too, up about 38% from the 2,800 lows in November of 2016 to a high of close to 2,900 in January of 2018. Like all the averages, the S&P is correcting as well, currently about 10% off its highs. Now, lastly, let's look at the NASDAQ. It ran an incredible 50% and maybe a little bit more in this last bull run from 5,000 to about 7,600. It too has pulled back 10% and, like the other averages, is trying to either find a base at these levels to begin another run from or fall to new lows beyond the 10% pullback range. Now, unlike the Dow and S&P, the NASDAQ didn't make its high until March of 2018 versus January with the other two. It's going to be very interesting to see if recent market lows hold. That's today's Looking Back.
We love connecting with our listeners. With that in mind, let's take a moment to answer a few questions on OIC's Wide World of Options Q&A segment.
We'll respond to three listener questions. M. Macias asks the following two-part question. If I buy a call option and afterwards sell it for a profit, I'm not the one obligated to sell 100 shares if that option is exercised later, right? And how do I close my call option completely and take my profits or loss? Well, first, Macias, you are correct. If you buy a call, then sell it for a profit or loss, you have no future obligation to deliver shares as you have closed the position. First buying the call and having to initiate the position, then selling it to close the position leaves absolutely no obligation to deliver shares in the future. Regarding the second part of your question, how do I close my call position? Just do it the same way you bought the call, either by calling your broker or by using your broker's online execution platform. Our second question comes from eBanker. He asks, I'm debating on using covered calls or short puts. Which is better for a less experienced options trader? Well, Mr. Banker, let's start by clarifying that the covered call and short put position are exactly the same positions with the exact same risk. The risk in both positions is in the downside, the long stock position. As far as which position type is better, the only real difference would be the price difference between the two. As efficient as the markets are with technology driving prices these days, rarely will you find one price higher than the other. One last thing, be sure you have the proper approvals from your broker before you initiate either one of these positions. Our third question comes from Duffy. How do you handle the fixed time aspect of trading options? Well, personally, it is that time aspect of trading options that can make it so exhilarating and at times frustrating. Creating your own set of rules for investing generally, but especially for options trading, is an important first step. In those rules, you will no doubt address the issue of time. How much time to buy or sell is critical. Be aware of the simple things like earnings announcements when deciding what position to take on. What time period, what strike price, what volatility level, all questions you need to ask when formulating your rules for options trading. So thanks to the three of you for our questions today. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Options Industry Council's Wide World of Options. If you have questions about anything you've heard on today's show, email Joe Burgoyne at options@theocc.com or visit optionseducation.org and chat with Investor Services. Interested in connecting with OIC on social media? Like the OIC page on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter at options_edu and Instagram at optionseducation and follow their page on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening and be sure to tune in to the next episode of Wide World of Options.
The preceding program was a production of the Options Insider Radio Network. For more quality options programs, visit www.theoptionsinsider.com or search for Options Insider Radio Network in your podcast provider of choice. Listeners can also access all of our programming through our mobile app, available in iTunes and on Google Play. Don't forget to follow along with your favorite programs and submit your own questions for the hosts at twitter.com/options, facebook.com/The Options Insider, or via questions@theoptionsinsider.com.